First speaker is Cody Gale, fungal endophyte-associated volatile organic compounds as deterrents to sucking pest cotton.
Do I get a pointer?
I don't think they have a pointer here for us.
Okay, no problem.
So you just have to use the...
Yeah, that's fine.
Get you started.
All right, great.
Here you go.
Oh, you got one?
It's a lightsaber.
Oh, sweet.
Thank you.
All right, cool. Okay, so I'm Cody. And sorry about this long-winded title. So it's not just any volatile organic compounds. It's fungal endophyte-associated volatile organic compounds as deterrents. So since I got a lot to cover in a short amount of time, just a brief outline. I'm going to go over the sucking pests, the fungal endophytes, what they are, the volatile organic compounds, and then the big idea that ties them all together. So right off the bat, the sucking pests, the top three in 2013 were stink bugs, Lygus bugs, and thrips. So you see a Lygus bug is the genus, so Western tarnished plant bug on the left, stink bug on the right. They are a problem now because BT and the boll weevil eradication program were so successful that a lot of people cut back on pesticide use, and since there weren't any caterpillars anymore, these sucking pests started popping up, and now they're a problem. And they're a real problem because, as you see here in this picture of the Lygus bug, they'll feed on squares and young bolls, and they can cause the squares to drop off, and they can transmit boll rot bacteria so that even once the boll is mature, it's useless. So fungal endophytes are microbes, so I don't have any good pictures of them because they're hard to get on camera, but usually are broken down into these four groups, the most famous of which are the mycorrhizal endophytes. So those are in the roots of most plants, and they are pretty much essential for nutrient uptake. The ones I'm interested in, and a lot of the soil labs interested in, are the protective agents. So these are fungal microbes that live asymptomatically within the plant. So you can't look at a plant and say, this one has endophytes, that one doesn't. You can't tell. You have to do other tests. And so that's a very important stipulation on them. So the thing with the protective agents is that there's this mutualistic symbiosis hypothesis. So the plant gives the endophyte a place to live, protects them from the outside world and any kind of thing that might, you know, otherwise kill a microbe. And in return, the endophyte can produce something for the plant, protect it from heat or insects. And that's kind of what we're seeing here. With volatile organic compounds, the pictures that you see on your right, these drawings, these are the most abundant volatile compounds that are released from cotton when it's fed upon by the beet armyworm. And so you might know volatile organic compounds as the thing that you smell when you smell a rose or a flower. Plants are always emitting volatile organic compounds, and flowers emit them to attract pollinators. What's really interesting is that herbivore oral secretion, so the saliva of an insect, actually causes and elicits the release of a distinct bouquet of volatiles. So on the far right, you'll see three compounds listed exclusively as green leaf volatiles. And so those are, like the monoterpenes and the spestoterpenes, those are present usually all the time. But the green leaf volatiles are released in response to feeding. And so lots of studies have shown that predators of caterpillars, per se, can actually smell the sense of the green leaf volatiles and use them to locate the caterpillars that they want to feed on. What I'm interested in is that these GLVs can serve to disinfect the wound, maybe. You'll see like a hexanol. It's like an alcohol, you know, so it can be like disinfectant, which could be important for the boll rot bacteria kind of thing, and they might actually serve to try and repel the herbivore as that herbivore is feeding. So my big question is, can the inoculation of cotton plants with endophytes change the profile of volatile organic compounds such that the pests might be deterred? So the inoculation of cotton plants with endophytes, what I mean by that is we usually take a seed and we'll coat the seed in fungal biomass or spores before planting, so that we try to boost the microbiome. We take an endophyte of interest and we try to set it up so that when the plant is growing, the endophyte has a good chance of getting in the plant early on. So the, you know, things to remember, they are this mutualistic symbiosis hypothesis that if we can get the right endophyte that, you know, appreciates per se the plant that it's in and can give the plant some sort of protection, and the idea that we're boosting the microbiome, it might have this amplified defense sort of effect where the boosting this microbiome early on might sort of stimulate the natural defenses, the endogenous defenses that the plant has. This is previous data from our lab. This is not data that I collected. This is the data that is inspiring my work. So when you take cotton and you inoculate them with endophytes and then you test them, this is a no-choice assay. So this is just the excised square bowl in a petri dish with the plant. What you can see in the graph on the left is that at any given time, there is a larger proportion of Liguus bugs on a control bowl or square versus on a piece of plant from a treated plant. On the right here, you'll see that significantly more Liguus bugs did not even come in contact with the treated plants, and there was significant hesitation for even coming in contact that first time. There's another way of looking at it. In a choice test, what this ratio is, the way it was analyzed with this ratio, if they always chose the control, the curve would be up around the 1 all the time. If there was no preference, it would be in the middle, and if they only chose the endophyte for feeding, it'd be on the bottom. And so you see that they always are in this area of preferring the control over the endophyte-treated squares. Well, the plants that were treated with endophytes, and we took those squares. So that was Liguus bugs. This is stink bugs. Pretty much the same thing. It's a little bit of a messier graph here, but at any given time, usually there's more stink bugs on a control bowl in a no-choice test. Significantly less of them even made contact. And there was significant hesitation. Same thing here, even more pronounced is this preference. In a choice test, they're pretty much always choosing the control bowl to feed on instead. And so this is where we get this idea that volatiles might be at play. So this is where we're seeing these insects have a choice or they don't, and they seem to not want to feed on these bowls or these squares that are coming from treated plants. And so if it's not a, let me nibble on this, let me taste this, oh, I don't like that, I'm going to reject that, I'm going to go to the other one. It's the insect seemingly can, I mean, what you would think is that they smell it. There's something coming off of that treated plant that is making the stink bug or the Liguus bug, you know, wary of it, wanting to feed on the control plant over. So this is why we're thinking it's volatiles. And so I'm going to try and test this by comparing the volatile profiles of control and endophyte inoculated plants. And so I'm going to start with just analyzing and getting the profile for constitutive volatiles. So these are volatiles that are just always there, you know, when it's, you know, the plant's minding its own business, it's not being fed upon, and compare those. Once they're being fed upon, that's where I think I'm going to see the difference. So remember I said the green leaf volatiles are released in response to feeding. And so I did the colors like this so that this is where, because I want to say that this is where I think I'll see the difference, is that when they're being fed upon. And so that might be a part of why we're seeing the behavior that we saw in the previous data. Those are excised bowls and squares. And so that sort of mechanical damage to, you know, removing it and putting in the petri dish, that might stimulate something similar to an induced volatile profile. And since plants release different volatiles at day and night, I want to eventually have 8 comparisons, so constitutive and induced for control and endophyte inoculated both at day and at night. So right now, this is what I have as the setup. So this is in a fume hood, and we took insulation and insulated the whole thing. Is that there's a little heater over here so that we can control the temperature. There's a light that we installed above, foiled off the shield, the glass shield that's for the fume hood, so that if it's closed, it's completely dark in there. And if not, I have pretty much the same light as I had where as I'm rearing these things in the chamber. So these are a control and a treated plant in the chamber. These are glass chambers, really well constructed. They have a spout. They have three spouts, but these at the top are not being used. It's just a closed chamber, still air in there. And what you'll see, I think this one. Yeah, I think you'll see a little better in this one. So I have all the plants in trays. They're small plants, like second true leaf, and I'm bagging them like this to try and mitigate the release of any volatiles from the soil. And so to do that, I'm just putting them in Ziploc bags. You might be able to see a little bit of cotton there. So right when I zip the bag all the way up to the stem, I'm stuffing a little bit of clean cotton in there to stop anything from coming out. And what you see down here is me sampling the air in here. So it sort of is like a syringe. And what we have is this spout at the bottom. We have, there's a little nut here, and there's a rubber septum. And so this is a speemy fiber, so a solid phase micro-extraction fiber. So the fiber is in this pen-like needle thing, and there's a needle on the end. It pierces the septum and exposes the fiber in there, and whatever volatiles are present, the different fibers will soak them up like a sponge, and then I can inject them into a GCMS. And so you might be wondering why I'm sampling from the bottom of the tube, and that's because the volatiles are believed to be heavier than the air, and since it's still air, I'm expecting them to sink. And so I'm collecting there at the bottom. So once I take those plants, I put them, so this is a profile, this is from the GCMS. This is, the plant has been equilibrated in the chamber for 3 hours, and I exposed the fiber inside for 45 minutes and then injected to the GCMS. And you get this big profile. What I'm doing right now, this is, I'm in the beginning stages here, I'm just analyzing the most abundant profile. So I'm looking at these big peaks and not trying to figure out what are these little, you know, blips down here in this noise. So if I zoom in on a group, I can take and look at each peak individually, and the MS can tell me, you know, exactly what it is that I'm looking at. Well, you know, it gives me a pretty good guess. And so you'll see here some of these are alcohols, some of the things that you would expect to see coming off of the plant. And at a glance, so I've only done two runs with this. I've only done two samples, but I'm not seeing any constitutive differences in this profile. They look pretty much exactly the same between inoculated and control plants. And that's what I'm thinking. So, you know, as I'm in the beginning stages, and as I go on, I'm thinking I'm going to see the difference here between the induced volatiles. And I'm going to start soon, but with aphids and moving on to all the different sucking pests. The saliva elicits the release of distinct volatiles, right? And so the different saliva from different pests might actually have different induced profiles at the end. So I want to thank you all for coming. Couldn't have done it by myself. Cesar Valencia, Ashley Tesno, VJ Verma, James Glover, they're all here at the conference. They've got some good stuff to share with you too. And Charles and Jose Perez couldn't do the GCMS without them. So thank you all, and I'll take any questions.
You mentioned that all these have your volatiles. That's why you're sampling from the bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the lighter ones might still be in the atmosphere of that chamber.
Yeah.
How would you go around sampling those?
So right now, with the speemy fiber, I am just taking, it's pretty much just a random sample of the air in there. And so it tells me, what I can see with that is everything that's present. But I can't use it to quantify. I can't say there's more of this or less of that. And eventually, I want to have air flowing through those spouts so that I'm collecting into a column where I can collect over many hours to see how much is in the relative abundance of this and that. And that way I'm getting everything that might be in there circulating and pulled into a column. I can use it for quantitative stuff in the future. Great.
We do have time for another question. If anyone has one.
Give this back. Thanks.